John chapter 18, verses 28, and it's quite a long reading through to 19:16. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early in the morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they didn't enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you going to bring against this man?" "If he weren't a criminal," they replied, "we wouldn't have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about what kind of death he was going to die. Pilate went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" And Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest and by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis of charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they slapped him in the face. Once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know I find no basis of a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing a crown of thorns and a purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis of a charge against him." The Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid, and he went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Do you not realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You'd have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who hands me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." And from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jewish leaders kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at the place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was a day of preparation. It was about noon. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away! Crucify him!" "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to be crucified.
O Morning, everybody. just pop this here. It's really good to be back in church. It's really good to be able to see some people's faces after so long. So we are in part two of our series on questions that people asked Jesus. And the question that we're looking at today is, what is truth? And the reason that I chose to pick this is because it's a question that actually comes up surprisingly often in my job. So many of you will know that I'm a secondary school teacher. You may or may not know that I teach Latin. I tend to keep that quiet because it's a bit weird. But I teach Latin, and I also teach the kind of Greek and Roman sort of society, culture, history. Which means that I teach Greek and Roman myths. And some of the Greek and Roman myths are just really weird. So you've got like gods that kidnap humans and then turn them into animals. You've got women who are half birds and sea monsters and giants with one eye. And a question that I'm asked like alarmingly often is someone will put up their hand and go, "Miss, is this true?" And I go, like, the main character just got turned into stone by a woman with snakes for hair. So, no, it's not true. I go, oh, okay, I thought it was true. So, like, last term, though, miss, last term you taught us about that volcano and that city, Pompeii, like, destroyed by a volcano. So was that not true either? And I go, no, that was history. That actually happened. And they're like, miss, you're just making this stuff up. Sometimes a student will offer me the suggestion that maybe the Greek myths were true for Greeks, but Christianity is true for Christians. And I will have to explain to them that there's either many gods who fight with each other, keep secrets, and look down on mankind, or there's one God who knows everything and loves mankind, but it's not really possible for those two opposite things to be true. Sometimes, usually as a deliberate attempt to derail the lesson, someone will say, miss, we don't really know any of this is true, do we? Like, how can we even be sure that the Romans even existed? And if I indulge that with a response, I kind of would end up saying something like, you'd need to ignore an overwhelming body of evidence and also wonder why anybody would make up the Romans. My favourite ever question that I got was from an A-level student who was sitting on an offer to study theology at Oxford. And I was teaching a period of Roman history where it was an assassination of the emperor's son. So it was history. And she said, miss, can you just confirm, I get muddled up, did he get assassinated by a centurion or a centaur? So I said, okay, a centurion is a Roman soldier and a centaur is half man, half horse. And she said, oh, I know that. I said, okay, so which one, like, do centaurs exist? And she said, not anymore, but they used to. They used to exist because people believed in them, and therefore they had to exist. So I found myself explaining to a potential Oxford theology student that you can't make things exist or not exist just by believing in them. And I've come to realise that there is a lot of confusion about the truth. There's a lot of confusion about whether truth is fixed or absolute. There's confusion about whether believing in something makes it true. And there's a confusion about the difference between what's history, what actually happened, and what's just a made-up story. The life of Jesus, of course, falls into the category of history, like the destruction of Pompeii or the life of Julius Caesar. There is historical evidence for Jesus that can be studied and researched, accepted or rejected. Down? Down? Say when? Okay. So the events of today's passage took place in around 33 AD in the Roman province of Judea, which at that time was under the control of the Roman governor Pontius Pilate. And in this passage, Pilate finds himself questioning Jesus. And Jesus tells him, I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth, and everyone on the side of truth listens to me. And Pilate responds with a question that is the focus of today's service. He says, what is truth? And as we explore the events of that passage in more detail, we'll see that there are different ways to respond to the truth. Because when Jesus proclaimed the truth, the Jewish religious leaders rejected that truth, but Pilate ignored the truth. So the events of John 18 and 19 take place in the lead up to the Passover festival. And we're picking up events at verse 28, which tells us that the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas, who was the Jewish high priest, to the palace of the Roman governor. At this point, the religious leaders have had a really busy night. So in the early hours of the morning, they've finally managed to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And they've been, for quite some time, looking for a way to arrest him, but they've not managed to. They've either been scared by the size of the crowd, or they've tried to seize him and he's slipped away. But now, they've finally got him under arrest. He's in their custody. So what do they want to do now? They want to kill him. Why do they want to kill him? Because he claimed to be God. Because he was healing people of sickness. He was raising people from the dead. He was claiming to be able to forgive sins. And people were calling him the Messiah. But they didn't believe him. They rejected the truth that Jesus claimed to preach. The religious leaders of the day didn't believe that Jesus was really God. And they didn't want anyone else to believe it either. And so they plot to get rid of him. Now, this time, Jerusalem, which is the centre of the Jewish nation, was part of the Roman Empire. So it was under Roman control, and only Romans had the legal right to carry out executions. Something that occurred to me only for the first time as I was preparing to speak today was the fact that, of course, they could have killed Jesus illegally without Roman involvement. Because the Romans really didn't care much at all about the internal affairs or the religious organisation of the people in provinces. As long as the people in provinces respected general Roman rule and paid their taxes, the Romans pretty much left them alone. They were prepared to turn a blind eye to all sorts of things. In fact, in the book of Acts, we read that Stephen was stoned to death in the streets and the Romans did nothing. They just let it happen. So if the religious leaders wanted Jesus dead, the easiest thing to do would have been to kill him in a back room, to dump his body on the streets and to just blame it on street violence, and they would have got away with it. So why did they complicate things by involving the Roman authorities? Especially when they hated the Roman authorities, they hated being under Roman rule. The Jews viewed Romans as spiritually unclean. They were a Gentile nation. The Jews resented being controlled by them, so why involve them? The answer is because they rejected the truth that Jesus was teaching. And they didn't just want him dead and out of the way, they wanted him publicly condemned. They wanted him to be formally executed. The Jews viewed crucifixion as a sign of God's curse. So what better way to prove that Jesus wasn't the Messiah than to have him publicly crucified? And even better, to do it during the Passover celebrations. And so they take Jesus to the palace of the Roman governor and they say, we brought you this criminal. And Pilate says, okay, well, what's he done? And the problem for the religious leaders, of course, is that Jesus hadn't really broken any law. In their eyes, he was a criminal, because he committed the crime of blasphemy. He'd claimed to be God, and he deserved death. But blasphemy wasn't a crime in Roman law, and Pontius Pilate wouldn't have really cared an ounce about Jesus claiming to be God. So initially, the Jews were a little bit cagey, and they kind of dodged the question. So they say, oh, if he wasn't a criminal, we wouldn't have brought him to you. Pilate says, okay, fine, if he's a criminal, take him and judge him in your own courts. What's it got to do with Rome? They said, we want you to execute him. Pilate says, if you want me to execute him, you're going to have to tell me what he's done. And what the Jewish leaders end up doing here is they tell Pilate that Jesus is claiming to be king of the Jews. In other words, they say that he's a political rebel. He's an enemy of Rome. Now, are the religious leaders actually lying? Are they speaking the truth? Well, strictly speaking, the scriptures said that the Messiah was a chosen one who would lead the Jewish people. And kings lead people, so that kind of makes him a king, right? So it's not really a lie. I don't know. They certainly made it appear that he was trying to, that Jesus was trying to be a political leader, which he clearly wasn't. So what we see here in the Jewish religious leaders is that what you believe affects your actions, because when they rejected the truth, it set them on a path. And it affected their behaviour and their actions, and it led them further away from the laws that they cared about. Because they wanted Jesus executed so badly that they were prepared to walk right up to the line morally. They might not have spoken untrue words, but they have given false witness. They also walked right up to the line in the literal sense, because Pontius Pilate was a Gentile. And according to Jewish law, to enter the house of a Gentile would make you ritually unclean, even if it was the palace of a Roman governor. And that's why it tells us in verse 28, they didn't actually enter the palace. They just waited outside because it was the Passover, and they would have had to ritually clean themselves, sort of have a period of days of ritual purification. They would have missed the Passover, a bit like people isolating themselves before Christmas so they didn't have to isolate before COVID. So they have not quite entered the house, but they have walked right up to the boundary. They've come right up to the line of being ritually unclean. And I wonder how they would have justified this. Perhaps they would have said that if you want to get things done, you sometimes have to get your hands dirty. But I don't believe that God ever requires us to sin or to knock on the door of sin in order to follow his path. And if we find that we have to walk right up to the line or even cross the line in order to achieve our purpose, then we need to ask ourselves whether we are working towards the right purpose. If we have to nearly lie or sort of steal or kind of cheat in order to get where we're going, then we are heading down a path that leads us to a dangerous place, away from the truth and away from God. Of course, the religious leaders at the time were not the only ones who played a part in Jesus' death, because while the religious leaders rejected the truth, Pilate ignored it. Pontius Pilate was the Roman, was the governor of the Roman province of Judea. And at that time, governor was about the highest you could get on the Roman career ladder outside of being in Rome. So after a term of governor, you might expect to return to Rome and take on sort of high political office. So Pontius Pilate was climbing the ranks of government. He was reasonably near the top. Early one morning, he gets this visit from these local Jewish religious leaders, and they hand over this prisoner, and they tell Pilate he's committed crimes. Pontius Pilate has got no interest at all in Jewish religious affairs, but he knows that they're celebrating the Passover, and he doesn't want any trouble, so he comes out to see what they want. And after Jesus is handed over to Pilate, what follows is a period of probably several hours at least, possibly longer, of Pilate going back and forth between Jesus inside the palace and the religious leaders and growing crowd outside. And something that comes across very clearly in John's account is that Pilate did not want to execute Jesus. Time and again, he tries to appease the crowd and he tries to get out of condemning Jesus. Each time that Pilate questions Jesus, he returns to the crowd and he says, "I find no basis for a charge against this man." In the reading that we heard today, those words came up again and again. "I find no basis for a charge against him." And Pilate tries all sorts of things to get him to kind of let Jesus off. He tries to offer to free a prisoner. That doesn't work. So he takes Jesus back in. He has him flogged. He has him fitted with a crown of thorns and mocked by the soldiers. Even though he doesn't think that he's done anything wrong, but he thinks maybe that will appease the crowd. But no, it doesn't. Each time, the crowd say, "Crucify him." And in chapter 19, verse 6, Pilate even said, "You take him and crucify him, but I don't find a basis of charge against him." What he's doing there is he's saying to the religious leaders, "I'm not prepared to have this man executed, but if you want to kill him, I will look the other way." But the religious leaders say, "No, we want you to crucify him." And this back and forth continues until eventually, we're told in verse 16, that Pilate handed Jesus over to be crucified. So it is clear that Pilate did not want to have Jesus executed, and yet he did. The difference between the religious leaders and Pontius Pilate is that the Jewish religious leaders were acting on their strong beliefs, but their beliefs were wrong. Pilate knew the truth, but he didn't act on it. And the way that Pilate justifies this to himself is he tries to pretend that the truth doesn't matter. So when Pilate first starts questioning Jesus in verse 33, Pilate says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says, "Is that your own idea, or did others talk to you about me?" And what Jesus is trying to do there is trying to make it personal. He's asking Pilate, "What do you think?" But Pilate is having none of it. Pilate says, "Am I a Jew?" And we can pick up like a real disdain in Pilate's voice here. Okay, just as the Jews viewed the Romans as unclean Gentiles, the Romans thought of the Jews as primitive and inferior. And that comes out in Pilate's response. He's saying, "I'm not a Jew. I'm not interested in getting into your silly religious debate." And the discussion continues until Jesus eventually says to Pilate, "The reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth, and everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And Pilate responds to that by asking the question, "What is truth?" Now, at first glance, it might seem like Pilate is now engaging with Jesus, like he's asking him a genuine question. But he's not, because Pilate doesn't actually want to know the truth. Because the truth might get in the way of where his career is headed. Or the truth might mean that he needs to make a difficult decision. Pilate doesn't want to engage with the truth at all. He wants to act like the truth doesn't matter, like the truth doesn't even exist. And actually, his question is a pretty smart way of doing that. And it's so good that it even works today. So let's say that I'm at work, and my line manager says to me, "Lou, where are your reports? The deadline's today." And I go, "What's the deadline?" Or, I'm really nervous because there's people here that I do work with. Or, say I'm on the hockey pitch and the umpire blows the whistle and says, "That's a dirty tackle." And I go, "What's a dirty tackle?" There's also people in the congregation I play hockey with. What am I doing in both cases? I'm not inviting a discussion into the definition of the word deadline or the rules of hockey. I know exactly what a deadline is, and I know exactly what a dirty tackle is. But it suits my purpose to pretend that I don't, and to try and persuade the other person that it doesn't matter. And the thing about Pilate's trick is it works for all sorts of other words too. I can dodge all sorts of challenging bits of the Bible simply by asking, "What really is sin anyway? What counts as laziness or drunkenness or lust or pride?" I'm not saying that we can't ask questions. When we open our Bibles, we're taking a book written in the first century and looking for wisdom for the 21st century. It's fine to ask questions. It's actually good to ask questions. But when we ask our questions, we need to be sure that we are earnestly seeking the truth rather than trying to avoid it. If I desire to get to the truth, then I might say to my line manager something like, "Are you sure the deadline was today? Because I thought we'd agreed Monday." Or on my hockey pitch, I might say something like, "I beg your pardon, umpire, but I believe I got to the ball first, so perhaps you could consult with the other umpire." If I ask those questions, they're going to eventually lead us to the truth, even if I don't like what the truth might turn out to be. But if I just go, "What's a dirty tackle? What's the deadline?" I'm not seeking the truth. I'm trying to avoid it. I'm going to suggest that in our world today, the most common response to the Christian message is those same words that Pilate spoke to Jesus. What is truth? Virtually nobody rejects the gospel of Jesus because they've looked hard into it and decided that it's not true. People reject it because it's not appealing, or it's not helpful, or it's not necessary, or it's not modern. But none of those things matter. The reason why I'm a Christian is not because I think Jesus' teachings are appealing or helpful, or that they help me to lead a better life. They do all of those things, but that is not why I'm a Christian. The reason why I'm a Christian is because I believe that Jesus' teachings are true. And if you are listening to this today and you are not sure yet whether you are a Christian, let me tell you that the only question that matters about Jesus' life and teachings is it true? Because if it's true, then God really did come down to earth to live among us. And if it's true, then Jesus died on the cross to save us from our weaknesses and our wickedness. And if it's true, he was raised to life again, and we can know him today through his Holy Spirit. But if none of that's true, if that didn't happen, if it's all just made up, then the Christian message is worth nothing. And it doesn't matter whether I find it helpful or attractive or whether it has an overall positive effect on society. None of that matters if it's not true. Because if the gospel of Jesus is true, then it is infinitely valuable. But if it's false, then it is utterly worthless. Maybe you're listening today and you are a Christian. Maybe you feel that you know the truth about Jesus. I want to say that as a Christian, I find Pilate's actions really challenging. Because what Pilate teaches us is that there is a difference between knowing the truth and acting and living like you know the truth. Something that happens often at school is that I regularly remind my GCSE students that they're sitting an exam in 4 months. I'm pretty sure that they believe me. They don't think I'm lying. But some of them don't act like they know that they're doing a GCSE in 4 months. They know the truth in theory, but it hasn't sunk in deep enough to actually affect their actions. What we believe should affect our actions. The gospel that Jesus proclaimed contains powerful truths that should affect the way that we think and the way that we act and the way that we live. And yet, when I look at my life, I'm conscious of areas where it seems like the truth hasn't sunk in. Do I always live like I believe that God's plans for my life are good all the time? Do I always live as if I believe that every person in the world is created by God and is precious to him? Do I always live as if I believe that all sins are harmful all the time? I wonder what Pilate felt in the later part of his life when he looked back on the day that he sentenced Jesus to death. I wonder if he recognized the truth of what he's done and regretted it, or if he hardened his heart and spent the rest of his life dodging it by saying to himself, "What is truth anyway?" So as we finish, I just want to leave you with these final thoughts. Firstly, it matters what we believe. Truth exists and it's real and it can be known. Being committed in your belief or sincere in your belief is not enough, because you can be sincerely wrong. The religious leaders of first century Jerusalem heard the truth from Jesus, but they rejected it. When Jesus claimed he was from God, they didn't believe him, and their beliefs informed their actions, and they had him executed for blasphemy. So it matters what we believe. But it also matters what we do with that belief. Did Pilate believe that Jesus deserved death? It's absolutely clear that he didn't. He tried again and again to let him off. Pilate knew the truth, but he didn't let the truth get deep enough into his heart to make a difference. The religious leaders cried out for Jesus to be crucified because they believed that Jesus was guilty. But Pilate allowed it to happen even though he believed that Jesus was innocent. Jesus came into our world to proclaim the truth, to save us from death and to give us fullness of life. And if we want to accept that offer, we need to seek the truth, to accept the truth and to let it transform our actions and our hearts and our minds. I'm just going to finish this with a prayer. Father God, we thank you for your great love for us. We thank you that you are the way and the truth and the life. We ask you to give us wisdom as we seek the truth. Amen.